Last year we just tried to grind our way through the grief.
Oh, yeah.
This year we're going to go back to my tried and true model. Self-destructive behavior.
I'm afraid because I'm so close to this. I might enjoy watching it from a distance, but I feel like I'm going to be involved somehow.
You're concerned. Yeah, you're concerned about collateral damage.
Yeah, there was some shrapnel coming my way. Ladies and gentlemen, now it's Too Late with Alan Mosley.
Hey,
right?
We're back.
It's too late.
We're somewhat back, guys. Welcome back for another episode of It's Too Late. I am your host, Alan Mosley, joined as always by the number one producer in late night. It's Dave Willimowski. Dave, a new look, a new you.
Yeah, we had a bit of a catastrophe today. So I'm in a different studio today. The other one's kind of non-functional right now. But, you know, first world problems, you know.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Hey, you've got your health.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a family that loves you.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, what else could a guy ask for?
Yeah. A working PC, I guess. I don't know.
All right. Well, needy something.
A bit much. Yeah.
I'll tell you what I can ask for, and that's for us to sell some more tickets to the 6th annual It's Too Late live show coming to you Saturday, May 18th in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. Dave, listen, we're going to have kangaroos and lemurs and a llama singular, but you don't, you know. Respect its personal space. There's alpacas. There's goats. There's a sloth. You know, I actually was looking up some stuff about the sloth. And so everybody knows that they're slow. But did you know that about once a week they have to poop? And that's the most dangerous time for them.
They go down to the ground.
Because they crawl their poop-laden intestines down to the forest floor. And they take a week-long shiz. Right there.
Yeah.
And then scurry back up. I don't know if scurry is the right word, but they go back up.
I'll tell you what, the lineup for your event is nuts. Like every time you go through it, I'm just like, this is crazy.
And you know how it is that people who watch the show are like, oh, David Allen, they're just spinning a yarn. But actually, all that's true.
Mm-hmm. It
none
is.
Of, yeah,
I've
none
seen
of
pictures.
That. Yeah. You've seen the pictures. Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. So anyway, that's the 6th annual It's Too Late live show, Saturday, May 18th, here in Columbia, Tennessee. Get your tickets down. There's a link down in the description and over there in chat. I would recommend for the genuine It's Too Late experience to get the super VIP.
Oh, yeah. For maximum VIP-ness.
Yeah. I've heard it on good authority that we've actually added another feature to the super VIP ticket.
Another one?
Yeah. So now, on top of the bracelet and the lanyard, they get a fortune cookie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can't beat that.
No. Yeah. We've been pretty on point with the cookies lately, if you recall. But anyway, guys, topping the news tonight, President Biden was at an event highlighting fundraising for AIDS research featuring special guest Sir Elton John. Here, take a look.
By the way, it's all his fault that we're spending $6 billion in taxpayer money this month to help AIDS, fight HIV AIDS.
Oh my god, it's all his fault.
That's AI, right? That can't be real.
It's real. Oh my god, Elton John did AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I bet all that color, it. Yeah. Candle in the Wind and all that. But anyway, I think Dave and I may have gotten this bit a little bit backwards, because normally I say, oh, President Biden's back in the news, and I say, oh, Dave, do we have a picture of President Biden? And then you go,
oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm right here. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
You know what? I feel like it's reinvigorated him.
Yeah, he looks spry.
Yeah. Hate. If I know one thing, it's that hate can keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you mean, mm-hmm? What's that supposed to mean?
Oh.
Sorry. It's fine. Don't answer that. Presidential hopeful Nikki Haley is back in the news after a social media intern. Listen to this, Dave. They were, you know how you get your social media intern and you have all of your posts for the whole week, and then they can schedule them so that they come out at specific times through, you know, throughout the week.
Oh, yeah.
So she accidentally sent the whole week's tweets all out at once.
Oh, that's not good.
And so here people were on Twitter scrolling through a week's worth of Nikki Haley tweets that all came out at the same time. But one of they found this gem right here. Check it out. Nikki Haley says, 12 fellas down, one to go.
Wow. Oh, and at 420, nice.
Yeah. so I think if I'm going to be generous, I would say that what she was trying to say is talking about other candidates dropping out of the race.
Obviously,
and there's only one left. But you know what? A little faux pas like that is not going to get Nikki Haley's spirits down. She was already in her home state of South Carolina campaigning, looking with throngs of excited supporters, just like these right here.
Oh, my.
Yeah, there's the...
Yeah.
There's the fellas. We found them.
Haley backers, I see them. Yeah.
You know, I bet... bet they were really pulling for her.
Oh, come on. Okay.
No? Okay, all right. No, it's fine. Forget it.
I usually give you at least one.
She'll give you 12. But in other news tonight, boy, cops around the country are absolutely going nuts after one of their comrades in arms suffered. Yeah, you like that? Suffered a professional setback due to an acorn. Take a look at this.
Okay. Shots fired! Shots fired!
This is real.
Oh my god.
What a psychopath.
I'm hit.
He's not done.
Oh, he's hit now.
What? I'm in the car! I just shot through the car! Oh.
Wow. So for people who maybe haven't seen the video but have seen the memes, so what happened was he had taken in a suspect who had allegedly possessed some illegal sound suppressors for his firearms. And after putting the suspect in the back seat of his squad car, an acorn fell out of the tree and hit the roof of the car, made a little thunk sound. This guy thought that was the suspect removing his restraints, producing a silenced pistol, and firing at the officer through the vehicle. But he also thought he had been hit somehow by one of the shots. And so naturally, what does he do? He unloads his mag into the back of his own squad car.
That's insane.
Yeah, and there's another officer there, too, by the way. Don't leave him out. Now, thankfully, the guy actually wasn't hit. So just to add icing on the cake, so not only did they unload two mags into the car, they also missed the guy with every single shot. So, I mean, I'm glad. Like, I'm not laughing about that. I'm glad he's okay. But, you know, Dave and I are here to take things like this seriously, because it would not be funny if somebody had gotten hurt. So what we decided to do was bring on a firearms expert to actually teach the audience at home the correct way to let an officer know if you have a firearm in your vehicle. Take a look at this.
Okay, today I'm going to show you how to properly inform a police officer that you're carrying a handgun in your vehicle.
Oh, jeez.
Nice and clear.
Yeah.
public service. Good there. Oh,
God. Yeah. So anyway, and finally this evening, boy, it just goes from bad to worse for our men and women in blue. But in an effort to rehabilitate the image and the facing the mounting criticism that the NYPD has been suffering, they actually formed a dance team.
Oh, good.
So check it out here on Local Access News. This is the NYPD dance team. Yeah, so that's the NYPD Dance Club, sponsored by Weight Watchers. Wellness that works.
Oh.
Weight Watchers. Yeah. Well, it's, the club ain't the only thing that can't be handled right now. But before we take our first break, guys, let me tell you about one of tonight's sponsors, which is Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. If you use promo code ITL, you get 18% off orders of $25 or more. I know, right?
Ridiculous.
Shipping is always free on orders of $37.99 or more online at foxandsons.com. I actually have the electric blue boogaloo right here. Listen to this, Dave.
Oh.
It's a blend of our dark and light roasts. Now you know me. I prefer to keep the dark and light roasts separate. But this is actually a blend.
Oh. Okay,
for the perfect medium roast. Chocolate, smoky, clean, with a floral hint.
Chocolate flavored coffee.
This is, guys, listen to this. This is chocolate flavored coffee. You can get chocolate flavored coffee and honey flavored coffee at Fox and Sons Coffee. That's foxandsons.com. Use promo code ITL. Guys, we're going to be back with the meme of the week and the viewer mail right after this commercial break. Don't go away. Back to the show, everybody. Let me tell you about tonight's other sponsor, which is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. If you use promo code It's Too Late, you get 10% off your entire order.
That's decent.
Actually have some right here. Ooh, look at the one I pulled up, Dave. This is the Blood Orange Ghost.
Oh, that is all scary.
Yeah, this one, if you see here on the side, it's problematic.
It sounds problematic.
Yeah. You also notice it hasn't been opened. You see? Yeah. You see that?
Yeah. It's taken from that one.
No, sir. Anyway, that is the Blood Orange Ghost, which you can find at the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company at tnhotsauceco.com. Use promo code It's Too Late. Dave, do you remember like a week or so ago or whatever it was when Tucker Carlson went over to Russia and interviewed Vladimir Putin? And then he asked Vladimir Putin, like, why'd you invade Ukraine? And then Vladimir Putin, it was like, well, you know, and then he starts telling like a millennia of Russo-Ukrainian history. And everyone made all the jokes and memes about that big, long-winded explanation. It finally dawned on me, Dave. That doesn't bother me at all. Vladimir was just trying to explain the lore.
Oh, lore is important.
Yeah. So now that you get that he was just trying to catch you up on the Russian lore.
Yeah, everything makes sense now.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Alan.
What time is it?
Time for meme of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, D3, don't do that at your first interview. But we do have a bonus meme. Check out the bonus meme.
It's almost the end of the year. We want to see how you edge. Show us your most memorable edges.
That meme's hot right now.
Oh my god. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, how are we doing on time? We doing good?
Yeah, I think
we're doing
we're
doing great. We can answer all the viewer mail.
Let's do it.
High tech. How many times have I said that I need to get you to edit that so it's not so, you know, like, serious?
Oh, I like it as serious. It's like... it's like a corporate, you know, function video. Gets me excited.
Yeah,
fired
really,
up for the team.
Yeah, you look real excited right
now,
Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all I can muster.
All right, okay. The first question comes to us from Aaron Kittner, who writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, what chain has the best donuts?" Dave, are you a big donut guy?
Not a whole lot of chains. Like if I get donuts, it's a local place that I really like. It's like chains. I know that Krispy Kreme's like the McDonald's of donuts, but it's still good compared to the other chains of donuts. I'd have to say that. Pretty good.
You know, I'm honestly not like a huge donut person. Mm-hmm. I don't eat a lot of donuts. I honestly don't even remember the last time I had a donut, unless you're counting the Little Debbie things that we ate.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, is it like basic for me to say Krispy Kreme and just...
Yeah, I guess get a keep going. Yeah. I don't know. I think I've had Dunkin', but I don't know what that. Do they still sell donuts? I know they're big on their coffee.
Yeah, but you do have to get like actual donuts from a bakery. You can't go buy a box of donuts. Yeah, that's nonsense. Justin Campbell writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, are you as excited about March Madness this year as you were about the NFL playoffs? Last year the tournament was a lot of fun. I'm hopeful this year will be as well." No. I haven't even watched a single game of college basketball yet this season.
That's going on. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's going to be March Madness soon. Hence the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, no, Justin.
No.
All right. Lyle Dario writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, should I buy a 23-year-old Buick?"
Oh. How old's mine?
How old is yours?
Oh, it's 14 then? Something like that?
Like, would you buy a 23-year-old Buick?
Probably not. I'm not good at working on cars. I'd have to know that, like, he had to fix stuff.
Yeah. But. I don't know. Well, that I feel like this is a question better directed towards Mitch. We'll ask
him.
Yeah,
he'd do that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, Lyle, run it by Malcolm, see what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Avery writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, in honor of President's Day, is Mount Rushmore a rock group? Were Washington's wooden teeth presidentures?
Oh.
Is the 11th president ate a pulled pork sandwich? Would that be a pig in a polk? And finally, is the current president going to exit the race quickly, or is he biding his time?"
That was a lot. We got it. I don't seem happy about that one.
All right. Mary Lynn Willimowski writes, "Dear Alan and Dave, what do you do when you're mentally overwhelmed and your head hurts because your brain hurts because there's so much flying around inside of it and you have already begun shutting down?"
Oh, that's a lot. Usually go to work.
No, Dave.
Just work through it. No. Or drink. Yeah.
Okay. Might want it. All right. So, Mary, the first thing I would say is that if your brain's not supposed to hurt, so you should probably talk to a doctor about that. If you are overwhelmed, then what I find is the best thing to do is just to talk to someone. It's just to lay it out there. Like this is what's on my mind right now. And then that person can say, you know, are you looking to solve these problems or you just want someone to listen? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess really this answer is more for Dave than it is for Mary. So Dave, if Mary comes to tell you what's going on inside of her head, just listen and don't play her that edging meme. All right.
No. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Not.
And finally this evening, Brian Johnson writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is the grossest thing you've ever eaten? Oh. Are we still doing like the, you know, are we still doing like the PG-13 rated show?
Oh, yeah, we're doing
okay.
Good.
All right. Yeah, I don't know, man. What's the grossest thing I've ever eaten? I honestly can't think. I mean, yeah. I'm not super adventurous when it comes to food. You know what I'm saying? Like if I think that I'm not going to like something, then I don't try it. I'm not a big taste tester, except for Peepsy and this show. I don't, you know what? Peepsy.
That was pretty bad.
Peepsy was pretty damn bad. The first one was bad. We're not even getting into the 11th one. The first one was bad. All right, Dave, I'll give you what's the grossest thing you've ever had?
I don't know. I feel like it's got to be some kind of seafood.
Oh, not a big seafood person?
No, not at all. But I'll try. Like, I'm opposite of you. I'll try anything and then really not like it. It might have been a squid or something like that. I think I swear I tried a little bit of squid somewhere and it wasn't into that.
All right. Well,
that's all I can do. Yeah. I don't like seafood.
Okay.
I mean, I like fish sandwiches and stuff, but
yeah. All right. Okay. That's fair. Commercial break.
Yeah, let's do it.
Guys, we're going to be back with Collins Alone to talk about all things Julian Assange right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
Well, better get back to it.
Just calm down. Don't do it.
You're looking at him, baby. Jeez.
Doing 90 to 30. Why?
Because I'm in the hood.
That's a good answer. I'll be speaking to this motherfucker, too. But you got any guns in the car?
No, sir. I ain't got no guns
in
this car.
You go need one. I'll be right back and grab you one.
Well, that's how you serve and protect the community.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our guest this evening is a writer and editor, and you can find all of his content, including his own show, Conflicts of Interest, over at the Libertarian Institute, which you can find at Libertarian Institute. Is it .com or .org? I always forget.
.org.
.org. It's an organization. Of course it would be. Also, our guest tonight has become way too good for us now that he is a regular fixture on the show of one Judge Andrew Napolitano. That's Kyle Anzalone. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back on the show, Alan. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, I know you're lying, but that's okay. We'll keep going. So okay, Kyle, you've been on Judge Knapp. How'd that come along?
Pretty good. Scott was doing a weekly thing. Scott Horton, that is the director of the Libertarian Institute, was doing a weekly thing on Napolitano's show. But Scott is trying to get the Russia book out. I think he's going to have it done sometime this year. Although last time I said that, he told me not to say that. So don't tell him I said that. But I've read early drafts of the book, and there's so much really good stuff in there. At this point, it's mainly just, you know, cutting it down. And, he has a lot of work to do, but it's really great so far what he has. So everybody should definitely be looking forward to that. So Scott was looking to cut back on some commitments, and, he suggested I go on the Judge's show, and I've been back invited back on a few times. And I mean, what a awesome guy to talk to. He is just so charismatic and very kind. And the first time I was on, I was probably a little bit starstruck, because when I first became a libertarian, at least, you know, Judge Napolitano was, I think, somebody, you know, you went to for an intro into libertarianism. Him, Tom Woods, Scott Horton, Ron Paul. This is back, I guess, 15 years ago now. Or more, when I was first becoming a libertarian. And so talking to him at first was a little overwhelming, but he definitely like kind of just makes you feel comfortable, like you're just chatting with anyone. So it's been absolutely great and a fun time to do.
Well, it's very well deserved, even though your story is very, very similar to the 10th Amendment Center. Now, I happen to know this because I've frankly been told to my face that if you contact the 10th Amendment Center and say, hey, we'd like to have somebody on to talk about this nullification issue, give us Michael Bolden. So this is what Michael Bolden does, is he he looks up and sees who you are. He says, oh, Kyle Anzalone, that guy's not very important. So he calls Mike Meharry and says, Mike Meharry, go do that show. Because Mike Meharry is the stooge that does the shows that are not good enough for Bolden. But, oh, now, let's say, you know, the Ron Paul Liberty Report calls up and says, okay, we need somebody on nullification. Get me Michael Bolden. Michael Bolden says, yes, sir. I'll be right there. I've learned that. I learned that firsthand, because when my show, The Gold Standard, contacted the 10th Amendment Center for the first time all the way back 6 years ago, I said, hey, I'd like to get Michael Bolden on the show. And they're like, best I can do is Mike Meharry. I was like, who's that? And they're like, just take it or leave it. And we took it. And the rest is gravy after that. So just so that you know, Kyle, in that analogy, you are Mike Meharry and Scott is Michael Bolden. So now you know.
That's exactly how it works. Now, I hear that Mike Meharry guy is a hell of a hockey player. I didn't know he did anything with the 10th Amendment Center, though.
Okay. All right, dude. Okay, well, with that said, I want to get into the meat of today's topic. So what Kyle and I are going to attempt to do is talk about this guy named Julian Assange. And that might be a name that you've heard in the news here recently or in the last several years. But we're going to kind of attack this from the angle of you see what's kind of going on in the news, but you don't really follow it that much. You don't know who this guy is. He must be like the craziest of the Bond villains, right? For the U.S. government to want this guy so bad. He must have done some pretty terrible stuff. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to start at the current events and then go all the way back to the beginning and work our way forward. So to start with today, what is going on right now in the news with this Day X stuff and a final appeal involving Julian Assange?
Yeah, Alan, and Julian Assange did commit maybe one of the most dangerous crimes in America, and that was humiliating Hillary Clinton, which we know could be deadly. So is, you know, Julian Assange surviving this long is maybe a huge accomplishment. But in reality, for anybody who wants to, you know, kind of remember who Julian Assange was, most recently he was, you know, in charge of WikiLeaks, and they released the emails of the DNCCC in the lead up to the 2016 election that made Hillary Clinton look corrupt and made the whole DNC look corrupt. And that in some respect, you know, contributed to her not appealing very much to Americans. And, you know, that was in part, we knew that because of WikiLeaks. And so they released that. But that's not, that doesn't have anything to do with the current charges against Assange. What Assange is being charged with is the leads that WikiLeaks published back right at the beginning of the Obama administration, but, you know, mostly documents from the Bush administration. These were leaked to WikiLeaks by Chelsea Manning, who was an army private at the time, and gained access to these documents and transferred them to Julian Assange. These include the Iraq and Afghan war logs, which are very important to understanding the true level of brutality of the American wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and having a better estimate of the death toll. The Bush administration really played down the death toll in these cases, and so that was really big. Of course, the collateral murder video, the video of American troops laughing as they killed civilians in Iraq, including a Reuters journalist, and injuring a couple of children. And then also there were the Guantanamo Bay papers in there and the State Department cables. And the State Department cables were probably the most significant, even though they probably get the least amount of recognition. But there's thousands of stories and very important stories that, you know, ran in the New York Times, the Washington Post. I'm not sure about the Wall Street Journal, but certain international outlets, the Guardian. I forget which was the French outlet involved there. But all these, you know, important stories about corruption going on around the world at the hands of the U.S. State Department in coordination with the Bush administration and the White House, and all that was exposed by WikiLeaks. And I really humiliated the American government and really exposed so many American war crimes and so many truly awful things the American government was doing around the world. And so after that, Assange became really a target number one for the American empire. And remember, you know, at this time, he's almost kind of a darling of the liberals, because most of the documents he exposed were the war crimes of George Bush. And, you know, if you remember back to 2008, and this is a long time ago now, Alan, but in 2008, The liberals were, you know, kind of anti-war. They had just lived through 8 years of George W. Bush, the Iraq, the Afghan wars, the real horrors of the Iraq war, completely perpetrated based on lies. And the liberals were fully against it. And so these documents really confirmed their biases. And so they really embraced Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And time goes on, and there were certainly important other drops of WikiLeaks during the Obama administration, some having to do with Syria, others that have to do with other countries around the world. They always say, you know, there's no WikiLeaks dumps in Russian, but I believe there are some in other countries around the world as well. But then when we get to 2016, of course, they received the DNCCC emails and released those. And these absolutely humiliate Hillary Clinton. And this turns the liberals against Julian Assange. They personally blame him for receiving these emails from Russia. No evidence of this. And then publishing those emails in coordination with the Trump administration. No evidence of that either. To win the election and, you know, what they say, raid the election. Of course, the emails are 100% authentic. And so if Hillary Clinton was a good Secretary of State, if the DNC wasn't corrupt, then these emails would have shown that, you know, these organizations were above board and Hillary Clinton was this great woman. And instead, they exposed a lot of her dirty laundry, a lot of the DNC corruption. And again, I don't think this is the reason she lost the election. I think she lost the election because she's Hillary Clinton and is just a profoundly unlikable person, a real, you know, literal swamp creature, the exact kind of person the American people really want to hate. And if it wasn't for the fact that so many Americans hated Donald Trump, I don't even think that election would have been nearly as close. And so, you know, this is who Julian Assange is. Now, under the Trump administration, under the Biden-Obama administration, Assange was in the Ecuadorian embassy in London because they had this, you know, basically sealed indictment against him. So if the UK caught him, then they would extradite him to the US. So he remained in that embassy for years and years and years. Then under the Trump administration, they bribed the Ecuadorian government with $6 billion in IMF loans to get them to give up Julian Assange. So he was arrested in the UK and has since been fighting extradition to the US and the UK, staying in the London Belmarsh prison, which is known as Guantanamo Bay prison of the UK.
All right, so this legal battle now has been going on for a long time. So there was the several years where he was pseudo on the run, but moving at a very slow pace because he was just hiding out in the embassy. And then, of course, we all remember the photographs and the footage of him being thrown into the paddy wagon, right? And there's the pictures of him giving everyone the thumbs up from behind the glass. And so there's a couple of aspects that I want us to touch on this before we move on. The first one being, how long now has his official legal battle been from the time that he's been apprehended, if you will, to today, and then kind of touching on. So what are we culminating with now? And then also once we've had a chance to discuss that, because I don't want it to slip my mind. A lot of the reports you're seeing is that he's not actually in court. It's about him, but he's not actually there because his health won't permit it. And I know that declining health has been a serious issue for Assange now for a number of years. So let's touch a little bit on that. So how long now has the legal battle been going on, and what is being decided right now?
So I guess it's really been going on since 2010, but he's been in the UK jail for, I think, 5 years now. So I want to say 2019, or though it could have been 2020. The Biden administration has just been so fast at times that I lose some of the dates there. But yeah, I think 5 years he's been. It was April of 2019 that he was arrested and put in the Belmarsh prison. So about 5 years now he's been fighting this battle in the UK. They initially were holding him for a year on a bail jumping charge. But then after that, it's basically just been an administrative hold on him because there's this pending extradition to the United States. There's a lot of battles around the extradition to the United States, some focusing on the First Amendment, some focusing on British law. You know, extraditions are kind of complicated because a person is supposed to have violated the law in both countries. And the UK has what they call the Official Secrets Act, which prevents the publication of classified documents. However, once a classified document is published, then anybody could publish or comment on those documents. And so a lot of the documents that WikiLeaks actually published as a part of the Iraq, Afghan warlords and these leads were still being prepared by WikiLeaks for release when a journalist for The Guardian gave away the passcode for those leaks that were stored on an online server. And without a certain passcode, nobody could access those documents. And so a Guardian journalist published that information. And so those documents were actually public before WikiLeaks released them. And so they're arguing that there's no UK law that's violated here. And on the American side, they claim he's violating the Espionage Act and computer hacking laws. The computer hacking charges are absolute garbage. They claim that because Assange gave Manning some instructions on how she could cover her tracks, that somehow means that he abetted the hacking of an American server. You know, it's common journalistic practices. Journalists do this all the time. They help their sources conceal themselves so their sources could get more information and expose more crimes by the government. You know, this is an important part of journalism. And additionally, the Espionage Act up until this point has only ever been applied to the leakers, right? So Chelsea Manning violated the Espionage Act because she swore an oath to, you know, the Constitution and everything, but also to not reveal classified secret information, which she did. Now, Assange is just publishing that information that he received as a journalist. And so, you know, these are two very different things, right? When Daniel Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers, they were trying to put him in jail under the Espionage Act, but they weren't trying to put the Washington Post, the editors of the Washington Post in jail. You know, the U.S. is trying to put Edward Snowden in jail for leaking all the cables on NSA surveillance, but they're not trying to put the Intercept, Laura Poitras, or Glenn Greenwald in jail, right? So this is supposed to be the distinction, and White House is absolutely blowing through it. And this is important here, is that during the Obama administration, they didn't officially press charges on Assange. They were there's this nebulous sexual assault charges that I think were all invented against Assange that were floating around in Sweden for a couple of years that Assange was willing to address. He just wanted assurance that he wouldn't be extradited to the U.S. in the process. But the Biden administration acknowledged there was a New York Times problem for Julian Assange, which essentially meant there was no difference from what Julian Assange did versus any journalist at the New York Times. And so to open this, you know, Pandora's box by prosecuting Assange, then they're going to allow the prosecution of any journalist in the U.S. Now, of course, most of what the Times, Post, Wall Street Journal published, those journalists will never be attacked because, of course, those are official leaks, right? The CIA gave that to them to publish, right? They're told, you know, oh, well, Ron is working on this secret thing. And they do that to inflate the threat of our enemies, to scare Americans. This is all a part of their very intricate and complex propaganda campaign. However, if anybody attempts to do real journalism, receive a real leak that the government doesn't want the American people to know about, then they'll be prosecuted just like Julian Assange.
Now, and real quick, too, I want to make sure that we touch on this before we move on to a quick commercial break. So I know that for people that have been watching things more closely, I know that they've seen some of the limited photographs that have been out there. So there was the number of years that so Assange was essentially in hiding. And then there was the years that he was in the Ecuadorian embassy and kind of the rumor mill going of, well, he's not in the best of health. It's certainly not the best of circumstances. And that might be a contributing factor. And then, of course, after he's taken by UK authorities, there's some of the limited photographs where he does not look well. He looks essentially invalid or bedridden. And now fast forward to the most recent court hearings related to his extradition leading up to right now. I guess he's on his final appeal, correct? This is his final appeal. If he Yep. loses, he will be probably whisked away to the United States pretty darn quickly, if I had to guess. And he's not able to attend because his health has gotten that poor. Is that a correct assessment of him? And is that is, of course, it's hard for us to guess what is going on there behind the scenes. But it's hard to imagine that it isn't at least partially contributed to his circumstances.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the years in the Ecuadorian embassy, having a limited amount of sunlight, one of the ways they try to smear Assange when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy is they publish these photos of him on a skateboard. And they're saying, oh, look at this crazy guy who's going nuts and skateboarding up and down the hallways. And I guess one of the reasons he was doing this is this is crazy to think about, but he hadn't felt motion. And you know what? He hadn't ridden in a car in years and years and years and years. And so to replicate that feeling of motion, he was just like going up and down a hallway on a skateboard. And so, you know, maybe to understand a little bit of what his time was like in the Ecuadorian embassy, how confined it was. Additionally, he has some kind of underlying health/autoimmune disorder. I know when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy, he would make bone broth for himself because that was relieving some of the symptoms associated with that. It's also come out in court that he has at least some level of autism spectrum, placement. I'm not exactly sure where, how severe that is. But, you know, that more contributes to his mental health situation. Of course, he's somebody who not only has been in a very harsh UK prison, but also was in it through COVID, right? And so the restrictions, the inability to talk to other inmates, to have any kind of social interactions, limited interactions with his lawyers, with his wife, with his children, with his family. And so all that has certainly taken a toll on him. I believe it is, you know, official medical that he had what they call like a mini stroke one of the days he was in court. And, I I know a lot of your audience is probably libertarian, and we know Ross Ulbricht, who's serving life in Florence in the U.S., and he's able to post a little bit more on social media. Assange isn't able to, but some of his advocates are. But Ulbricht will sometimes, you know, put out tweets through his advocates on social media about what it's been like in that supermax prison throughout COVID. And I can only imagine that Assange is in a slightly worse place. Of course, Ulbricht is a younger man, a healthier looking young man, too. And, you know, the way he says, you know, the kind of toll it's taken on him and how restrictive it's been on him. I think he said he got like 3 hours of kind of a community time recently, and how like glorious and how big of a deal that was. So the conditions for Assange in prison are really rough. And another quick thing on his health, Alan, and just, you know, think of this like kind of mental torture they put him through. When they initially took him into Belmarsh, they falsely told him that he was HIV positive, and it wasn't true. But that seems like just a kind of another form of medical torture, psychological torture.
That's so weird and random that they would do that. It's hard. Excuse me for wearing the tinfoil hat, but I would dare say that our overlords would rather him just drop dead. But that being neither here nor there, Kyle, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want us to talk, do a little bit of prognosticating of what might be coming next, as well as, maybe handle some of the objections that you hear from the typical regime shill of why we shouldn't be championing Julian Assange right after this commercial break. Don't go away. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley is proudly supported by Fox & Sons Coffee. Fans of It's Too Late use code ITL and receive 18% off orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders over $37.99. To get yours today at their website, which is www.foxandsons.com. It's www.foxandsons.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are joined once again with our good friend, Kyle Anzalone. Kyle, let me hit you with one that you see a lot on social media, particularly from our wonderful right-wing champions of liberty and justice, who will say, but Kyle, Julian Assange leaked information that put U.S. soldiers in danger.
Yeah, so even this came out during the Chelsea Manning trial that no U.S. soldiers or I guess the claim about U.S. soldiers is different, right? They say that the Iraq-Afghan war laws, the Guantanamo papers, exposed American war crimes. And because of that, that increased hatred against American soldiers in the Middle East. And to blame the person who exposed the crimes rather than the people who committed the crimes is just kind of the backwards mental traits that Republicans tend to do to themselves, right? Rather than blaming the soldiers who are killing these innocent civilians, George Bush, Dick Cheney, or whoever else, you know, is responsible for the Iraq war, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, you know, we have a huge number of people who we could blame and hate for the war in the, you know, ramifications of this war, which includes increased hatred for Americans among people in the Middle East. And a part of that, you know, is an increase in the amount of like jihadist terrorism and anti-American terrorism that goes on in the world. And because our current leadership makes American soldiers so accessible to these foreign terrorist groups by keeping them in poorly defended bases in the Middle East, all over the place, Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Djibouti, you know, just all over the Middle East, it's, you know, created this problem where, yeah, sometimes American troops are getting killed, but this isn't the fault of Julian Assange. He's the one that's exposing the problem that should be allowing our society to make a change, to improve. That way we don't, you know, dread, you know, create all this killing that creates so much hatred towards Americans. Now, the other kind of part of this claim, Alan, is that Assange leaked these documents, and a part of the Afghan war laws, there were names of people who worked with the Afghan government. And they say, oh, he got informants killed and things like this. Well, it's important to note that WikiLeaks was really working to go through and remove all these names from the Afghan warlords. And it was that Guardian journalist who went ahead and released the documents before WikiLeaks and Assange was ready to, that published all those people's names. And the reason WikiLeaks went ahead and released the cables with all those people's names as well is because once it's out there, everybody's going to have access to it. And so, you know, it's just as important for the people who are on the list to know, so they could take steps to protect themselves, to move whatever they have to do, as it is, you know, to anybody who could possibly find those names.
Now, I do, you know, you can't help but just notice the irony of the fact that you don't see a significant movement by the state to discredit or disprove any of the leaks. You know, they're not saying, oh, no, we didn't commit these things. Nowadays, they're just saying we're going to go after the people who talk about them more than that. There is one other objection you hear. Now, you already touched a little bit on the, well, Julian Assange. Well, he's just, of course, doing this for Putin. Now, these are Putin talking points. He's just working for the Russians, clearly. And granted, you already touched on, you know, no one was saying that in, you know, 2010. You know, all of a sudden, fast forward to today, that's sort of become the topic du jour. But this is one you hear a lot, too. So I'm going to throw you this softball. Well, of course, he's saying these things that hurt America's interests, but he's not saying that things that hurt the interests of, you know, say, China or Russia. Well, that means, of course, Julian Assange is a traitor.
Yeah. So, you know, again, Assange and WikiLeaks have released documents on other countries, including Russia. One thing I will note is that WikiLeaks is in Assange. He's an Australian citizen. I think WikiLeaks operate in Iceland and several other countries, but, you know, it is primarily an English organization. And so if it's an English organization, just like the Washington Post is going to publish, you know, more articles about American corruption than Russian corruption, it doesn't mean that this outlet is particularly like a shill of Russia, China, or any other country. It's just, it's an English looking outlet anyways. And so that's where the audience is. And I'm guessing the prominence of WikiLeaks is what drives more people to leak to the organization and kind of, you know, fuels the organization. And so I think that's a large part of why most of the leaks are in English. I don't think this is any kind of conspiracy. It's just how things work, how media works.
Well, so I'm glad you mentioned that. It's hard to be a traitor to the United States when you don't actually belong to the United States. Assange is an Australian citizen, but since you did mention that, let's talk for a brief moment about Australia. Now, I do know that there was some recent news about a vote or a resolution in support of Assange, but just kind of give us sort of a broader impact of what has Australia's position on this international escapade with their own citizen. Have they done anything for Assange? Have they done nothing? Have they hurt him or help him or anything in the middle?
So for a long time, the government of Australia, I think, was either not concerned about it or was on board with it. The previous, I want to say prime minister, I don't think it's president, prime minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, seems to be supportive of the prosecution of Assange. The current prime minister, Anthony Albanese, is not. And he actually was one of the members of parliament that voted in favor of this resolution that I think you're referring to there, where they demanded that the U.S. just allow Assange to go back to Australia. Enough is enough with the prosecution. Enough is enough with Assange being in detention. It's been almost 15 years now. It's time for him to just come home to Australia. He's not an American citizen. And so, you know, the U.S., I really don't think we shouldn't be trying to extradite and charge a journalist under the Espionage Act anyways. Well, we really shouldn't try to be charge a foreign journalist under our Espionage Act that wasn't even in the United States anyway. This is somebody we have to extradite from the United Kingdom. And so, yeah, I And there are a couple other people within the Australian government that have really taken up the cause of Assange. They've come to the U.S. They've lobbied American lawmakers on this. And look, you know, our congressmen obviously don't respect us. They would spit in our faces if they had the chance and steal the rest of our money that we have. They have absolute contempt for us, but they probably do have a level of respect for other lawmakers from other countries. And so, you know, I don't want to diminish that several Australian lawmakers, I think late last year, came to the United States and met with some of our lawmakers and tried to change their minds on the issue. However, it really doesn't seem to have made a major impact. There's a bill in Congress right now in support of Assange, just in the House. I want to say Paul Gosar is one of the co-sponsors. It's bipartisan. I believe Massey's on it as well. Rand Paul has come out pretty strongly in favor of Assange, but generally speaking, they don't care.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I do want to read that out really quick, because Thomas Massie did post this this morning as the final appeals are being heard. So there was a letter sent to President Biden. I won't read the whole letter, but essentially saying his persecution by the United States is without merit and should be dropped. Now, of course, unfortunately, his legal woes as it pertains to the United States have survived multiple presidencies, both right wing and left wing, which it is a bipartisan effort to destroy this man's life. But also, interestingly enough, it's a bipartisan effort when you see some of the signers on to the document. I won't read all the names, but you'll see people that don't typically agree on a lot of positions. So, of course, there is Thomas Massie, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, along with Paul Gosar, Ayanna Pressley, Marjorie Taylor Greene, along with a Cori Bush and a Rand Paul and an AOC. So those, I think it's pretty fair to say that you've painted a pretty wide spectrum of political discourse in the United States that are signing on saying, Mr. President, stop the prosecution of Julian Assange. So we're running a little bit short on time here, but if you can comment a little bit on that, how it's so weird to me that it seems like it is a bipartisan effort to destroy the man, but also a bipartisan effort to save the man. So if we can't simply paint things in a simple black and white, left and right, what are the two sides at war here?
Yeah, so there's the normal people of the United States who are now lumped into the radical right and left. And then there's what should actually be called the extremist centrists, which I don't think make up very many of the American people, but certainly make up most members of Congress, right? This is Mitt Romney, Hillary Clinton, and everybody, Joe Biden, all these people who are really just radical centrists, right? They don't believe in the First Amendment. They don't believe in the Bill of Rights. That you could maybe call them all elitist because they believe the Congress and the American government is all-knowing and could do whatever they want, and the American people will just have to suffer with it. And if their policies don't work out, well, it's our fault for not doing things the way they anticipated that we would do things. And so that's kind of the way I look at American political dynamics. I find it a lot easier most of the time to get along with the leftists. And a lot of these leftists are just as skeptical as libertarians about a lot of these woke issues, a lot of these cultural issues that, you know, all these dictates the government is constantly trying to come out with, you know, the kind of the separation of family, the usurpation of family roles by the public school system and things like this. You know, there are a lot of leftists that are skeptical of this, and you have more Republican-leaning, even conservatives, you know, like Tim Pool today declaring that if you're un-American, then you should leave America. And, you know, you kind of want to ask Tim, well, the people in charge right now think you're un-American. Do you think you should leave America? And this is just some of the absurdity that exists within, I think, what, you know, we should really refer to as the extreme center, where the rest of us normal Americans who may have our political differences among the right and left, you know, are taking rather normal positions well within the Constitution and far less bloodthirsty and subservient to the military industrial complex in Israel.
Well, on that note, to sort of wrap things up, of course, Kyle is of course live with here us Wednesday night on February 21st. But as we are having this live conversation, of course, Assange has had arguments have been heard throughout the week. Arguments are continuing to be heard today, Wednesday, and I imagine that we will be hearing a verdict pretty shortly on his final appeal to avoid extradition. If you would, you don't have to, me being an eternal pessimist, you probably know what my answer is going to be, but if you had to prognosticate, what do you think is going to be the verdict?
So I think this is going to continue to be a drawn out process, Alan. I don't necessarily think Joe Biden wants to deal with this problem in an election year. I think he would much rather wait. Remember, he ran on a return to normalcy, an end to this Joe Biden, or not Joe Biden, this Donald Trump war on journalism and war on the international world order and all these other things. And a big part of what you had to see is Trump's war on journalism is his persecution of Julian Assange. And so I think bringing to Assange to the U.S. this year would just be another problem for him and for his base, who, you know, claim they stood up for liberal and, you know, American rights and all these kinds of things, which they a lot of them really don't care about. So I kind of expect this to continue to be drawn out. I don't think we're going to get a ruling soon. I would guess it'll take a couple weeks. It'll be released on a Friday. It will, you know, kind of just slide out into the media very quietly. So make sure you keep an eye on like Assange Twitter accounts and things like that to get information. And then as far as the extradition goes, I see a lot of people saying, well, you know, depending on how the arguments go, they certainly could issue a ruling, Alan. And as we're recording here live on February 21st, Assange could be arriving in the United States on an unmarked plane. It could be, you know, as we know it, in a jail somewhere in the Washington, D.C. area tomorrow. I don't think that's likely. I think what the Biden administration would like is to draw this out for the remainder of the year and then have the extradition take place. Or, you know, better yet, for the Biden administration is just Assange to die in prison. And so they don't have to deal with the extradition. But either way, I don't think they want to deal with this right now. And so my guess is this gets stretched out throughout the remainder of the year. And again, you know, the conditions of the prison and Assange's health, it's not a bad play on the Biden administration's part to try to stretch this out for another year, maybe ask the British government to give him a little less food or something, and maybe they just won't have to deal with the problem of him coming to the U.S. or them having to admit defeat and drop the charges against him.
Well, speaking of admitting defeat, Kyle, where can people go to support you and see more episodes of Conflicts of Interest?
The Libertarian Institute is the best place to go to find my work. Of course, that was founded and run by the great Scott Horn. Also, my colleagues there include Sheldon Richman, James Bovar, Laura Calhoun, Ted Galen Carpenter, Keith Knight, Connor Freeman, who is the co-host of my show, Will Porter, who's a good friend of ours, Patrick McFarlane, and a lot of other people who I'm pretty sure to become a member or to become a staff member at the Libertarian Institute, Alan, you actually have to appear on It's Too Late at least two or three times. So
very true.
You know, it's a group of people that your audience is very familiar with.
Very true. I'm going to start naming names of people associated with the Institute that haven't been on the show yet so that we can get them scheduled on so that they can hear this sound when they say something stupid. And speaking of that, Kyle, it's time for the bonus round. Are you ready?
Never, but let's all do right. It.
Is a corn dog a Wellington?
Yeah, I mean, it's a poor man's Wellington, but it is a Wellington. It's beef or some sort of meat wrapped in a bun.
That is correct. A corn dog is indeed a Wellington. Way to go, Kyle. I knew you had it in you, buddy.
It only took me five of these things to get one right.
That's all right. I think you're now up by one on Patrick. I'm pretty sure he's in last place. Hunter is 50-50. I think you're now one up on Patrick, and I don't know who's in first.
I could see Hunter doing very well with these.
Yeah, okay. What are you trying to say that he's just the right amount of autist to get these questions correct? All right. Okay. Anyway. Technically, if you're going to count, see, this is one of the, it's like football. You have to have a minimum of certain number of pass attempts in order to be in the record books. Joseph, Solis Mullen has only done one, but he's 1-0.
So you got to get him on the show two or three more times.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And ask him the catch up one.
All right. All right. That's fair. Guys, we're going to be back to wrap up the show right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
If you're enjoying tonight's show, consider supporting the program by becoming a member of our Patreon. That's over at patreon.com/AlanMosley.
Like our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AlanMosleyTV. You can follow me on Twitter. It's twitter.com@AlanMosleyTV. Subscribe to our YouTube page. It's youtube.com/AlanMosleyTV. But if you're more of a listener than a watcher, you get us on your favorite podcasting platform of choice, thanks to Spotify. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley or @AlanMosleyTV. Also, don't forget to get your tickets for the 6th annual It's Too Late live show, coming to you Saturday, May 18th in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. Dave, do you have a final thought?
Wow. You know, despite a couple little setbacks, I think we put together a pretty good show. That was nice. Kyle was great. Good to have him on.
We put on a good show. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Man.
Yeah, we
couldn't do it without me. Right?
Look, the bags just keep getting bigger and bigger under my eyes.
Same. Yeah,
see that?
Same.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of your a little bit of your week this week.
Yeah, I sent a picture to Mary earlier. You can't really see it on this camera, but I'm starting to develop streaks too.
Oh,
yeah, I'm getting like the whole mad scientist thing going.
Yeah, you got
because like that's what it takes to be a genius. You got to be mad.
Part of your character arc.
Yeah,
this is your mad scientist era.
Yeah, I'm out of the yellow fever arc, and now I'm into the mad scientist arc. All right. I don't think we're doing an after party tonight, because Dave's tired and I'm angry.
Yeah.
So pretty much the usual. And people are like, well, that's really no different than any other week. Why aren't y'all doing a...
Oh, this one's extra.
Yeah, extra. We're a little extra this week. Guys, thank you for watching another episode of It's Too Late, and we will see you next week.
All right. Good night, guys. I'm sure it'll all be fine.
Yeah.
Just have to, reinstall Windows and...
Well, Keith says it was a great show, so...
Oh. Well, thank you, Keith. That was nice of him.
Yeah, I've always thought Keith was a good person, even though you don't think that.
No, I think he's a great person. He's not a terrible person at all.
Yeah. Wow, it was just a certified banger.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Neat. We were just over here playing guitar. We're paying any attention. I don't know.